Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
On March 20th, in downtown Portland, ORHistory.com and Kickass Oregon History, in conjunction with the Jack London Bar below the Rialto Pool Room, hosted an event called Humanity on Wheels, an evening of mass transit tales. I was privileged enough to get the permission of Doug Kent Crispin, who is the resident historian at ORHistory.com, to record some of the stories. So we've got some of the featured performers, featured guests that were there that night to share with you now. We've got Dr. Jeff, William Reagan, or Bill Reagan, I think, to his friends, Heather from Mile73.com, and Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot. We're going to share all of those stories with you today. Also, stay tuned next week for the highlights of the open mic event that happened after the official presentations. We will start with professional transit rider and Twitterer, Dr. Jeff, as introduced by Doug Kent Crispin.
We're going to talk to our dear friend, Dr. Jeff, and he's going to come up. This man commutes 4 hours a day on mass transit. That Dewey is a real bitch. Come on up, Dr. Jeff.
Compulsory microphone adjustment time here. It's kind of like following Hulk Hogan with Gandhi or something like that. I've upped the profanity level a little bit just for you guys. And I was really tempted to jump right into my super love the bus thing that I've got, but I'm going to hold off on that a little bit. My name's Jeff. I am a serial commuter. I commute from Gateway Transit Center out to Forest Grove and back every day. I ride the fucking MAX and the fucking bus. 4 hours a day, because I can't get a better job. I would work on it. So I've got a lot of stuff here written down, and I'll read some of it and give up on some of it after I've worn out my welcome. But the first thing I wanted to do was Doug and I knocked around the idea of some poetry. So what I did was I was on the bus the other day, and I found this little crumpled up piece of paper on the floor of the bus. It was a guy who looked a lot like Allen Ginsberg. I think he's dead, but I'm not sure. But I wanted to read some of his poetry that he apparently, after riding the bus for a while, kind of adapted for TriMet purposes. So I'll read you a little bit of this, and then we'll move on to something else. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by schedule changes. Starving, hysterical, naked, dragging themselves through the transit mall at dawn. Looking for a hipster on a fixie, or the number 51 bus. Anything to get home and away from the ancient diesel 15, a starry dynamo and the rarely maintained machinery of TriMet at night. Who poverty in tatters and hollow-eyed and high, stood in line at Pioneer fucking Square, no longer fareless and accosted by street kids needing three-zone holographic tickets in the supernatural darkness of pre-dawn daylight savings time, their transit operators hold up in Coldwater Flats, or maybe a nice two-bedroom in Gresham, a soft swing from the juggalo haven of the gas-lit Gateway Transit Center, who bared their brains and probably some guts poorly sheathed in inappropriate East County tank tops under the MAX overpass, and saw McFarland's budget angel staggering to the finish line after what felt like 400 ill-attended community meetings, one bare light bulb illuminating 7-Eleven donuts and a stunning lack of new ideas, short of a survey-fueled plan to just cut the fuck out of everything. Savants expelled from academies of knowledge to rain terror on mid-level transit functionaries, burning their monies in the wastebasket of the waking nightmare of a gigantic bridge over Interstate 5. Hey, who?
Remember, McFarland makes
Exactly. Who's riding the bus home tonight? Anybody? I got bus tickets for you. Pass these around. All right. Bribe the audience. That's what I learned a long time ago. So, I don't know how many of you ride the MAX much, but I have been known on my Twitter feed, Dr. underscore Jeff at Twitter, D-O-C-T-O-R underscore Jeff. Just short of 700 followers. I need more followers. Tell all your friends. I occasionally gripe about the Type 4 MAX, and the Type 4 is the streamlined MAX, the MAX of the future, or of the past. I don't know. I was on the MAX a while ago, and I penned a little goodbye note to the Type 4, a breakup letter, if you will. So if it's okay with you, I'll read that right now. Dear Type 4, I'm guessing that you know why I'm writing this. You can't be so out of touch as to have missed the signs. My petulant whining each time we got together, the chorus of complaints from your other riders. I know you've been paying attention. The simple fact, Type 4, is that you and I were never meant to be. Unlike your comfortable predecessors, you're a rolling body cramp, an affront to basic human needs. When an average height, average breadth, generally happy commuter such as myself cringes when you pull up, you can bet that those of not so average proportions must absolutely grind their teeth in trepidation when they see you. If you were a restaurant, you'd be one of the places that looked all charming and rustic on the outside and then serves canned gravy and frozen beets on the inside. When I was in my early 20s, I managed a fast food place for a while. One of the restaurant supply catalogs classified their chairs by the number of minutes in which one could sit comfortably in that chair, you know, before they had to get up and leave. Fast food restaurants obviously went for the 10-minute chairs or so. You, Type 4, are the 5-minute chair of the transit system. Alas, my encounters with you last far longer than that. There have been times, Type 4, that I've waited for a substantial amount of time for my train, only to find your streamlined presence fast approaching. And there have been times, I'll confess, that I let you and your stupidly named parlor and your two high seats and your cramped dungeon-like front row of pinched seating and your scary old lady-killing ramp step up just go on without me. The mark of true hatred on transit line is when someone will pass you up and continue to wait for the next train. I commute for 4 fucking hours a day, and I let that train go by. Do you hear me talking to you, Type 4? Do you hear the icy chill of rejection in my voice? They say there's someone out there for everyone, Type 4. Could it be that in some faraway land there lives an undiscovered race of oddly shaped, tiny, asymmetrical commuters with a penchant for cramped conditions and ill-conceived design? Let's hope so. For if that's the case, perhaps they'll draw up a tiny, cramped petition that convinces the powers that be to ship you to that land on the next possible freighter. And Type 4, I hope that when that happens, if it does, your trip is the most horribly fucking uncomfortable voyage imaginable. There's more to that poem, so I'm going to read that now, too. My stuff's out of order. So when we last were with the poem, who got busted by the deathly tall bearded... Didn't you see how I just kind of jumped right back into the rhythm there? It's not easy to do. Who got busted by the deathly tall bearded... Have you seen that guy? Who rides the MAX? Have you seen that guy who's like 8 feet tall, the fare inspector? I show him my fare and then I give him extra money because he just scares the shit out of me. Who got busted by the deathly tall bearded fare inspectors listening to the terror palpable the next train over? Trapped between Geldwin and Goose Hollow, streets of shuddering cloud and lightning in the mind, leaping a sleeping homeless dude curled up against the accordion midsection of Max, spilling onto the motionless world of time in between, except when the news cameras are on and healthcare for operators becomes less of an issue than a roaring winter demonstration of riding teahead miscreants to new sources of income removed from turpentine-drinking kings of light and evasion. I don't even know what the fuck that means. sounded kind of cool, though, right? Who chained themselves to Facebook and Twitter, impotent ashcan rantings. That's about me. That part's about me. Impotent ashcan rantings sunk all night in the submarine light of the 17, riding their privilege, phones lit blue as they rally their followers with hashtag tweets in the stale beer midnight of the original Pancake House. Transfer expired, listening to the crack of doom on the hydrogen jukebox, mindless of the $17 million shortfall when compared to the brain drained of brilliance and the sheer inability to raise $2 to get the fuck home. That's that one. Got a lot of stuff. Just a couple more things here. Speaking of the budget crisis, I wrote a little. We got some luminaries here tonight, by the way. We have Brock is here from the Sprocket podcast. I don't know if you listen to Brock's here. I saw Michael back there from Portland Afoot. He's back there. We got Dave from the TriMet Diaries. We got all kinds of celebrities here tonight. If you don't read the TriMet Diaries, you need to read the TriMet Diaries. Just trimetdiaries.com. Best site on the internet. It was voted 5 years in a row by the Academy. Best site on the internet. So I don't know. The Academy of what? I'm not sure. The Academy of Dave, I think, is the... Oh, okay. Well, I came up with a couple of... budget-cutting ideas, and maybe I'll just leave you with those. There's this big $17 million, $10 million, $3 million, $50 million shortfall. I'm not sure what the shortfall is. But I think it's my responsibility as someone who commutes a lot to come up with some ideas about how to take care of that budget shortfall. My first thing was, and TriMet proposed to have kind of a unified fare where there weren't transfers anymore. What I want to do is random fare. So if you get on the bus, it's either going to be like free or $30 to ride, you know, from PSU downtown. Imagine how great that would feel, though. You get on the bus and some poor sucker in front of you has to pay the whole bus's fare and you get to ride for free. So that's kind of, I think, the main thing. The other thing is, you know, the poetry they have up in the buses? They should make those fuckers pay to put the poetry up there. I want to get paid to read that shit. I don't want to read that poetry anymore. My shoe under the couch. Lost my shoe. Shoe, I hate you under the couch. Okay, $20 to read that shit, please. They were going to eliminate some lines. I say eliminate all the even-numbered bus lines. 50% savings right there. Driver for a day. Who wouldn't pay like $1,000 to drive your favorite bus route, right? Just be riding the 57, man. $1,000, you get to take the people wherever you want to. Here's what I want to do. Finally, leave someone standing outside the fucking bus while I'm just sitting there at a stoplight, right? I'm driver for a day. And the last one, and this is the one that'll make the most money, Stripper Max. They got the polls in there already. Portland likes strippers. Portland likes public transportation. Stripper Max. Thank you.
After Dr. Jeff, Heather from mile73.com came to tell some more stories about riding public transit.
Hello. My name is Heather. I bust those people in from Gresham. Thank you. I write a blog called Mile 73. Please hold your applause.
It's awesome.
I'm also married to Dave, of Dave Knows, and of TriMet Diaries. And so he would rather be drawn and quartered than come up in front of a bunch of people and talk about anything. So I just wanted, before I tell my story, to talk about TriMet Diaries a little bit. It was an idea that Dave had in a flash of inspiration, one of those things, basically plagiarizing Muni Diaries from the Bay Area. And theirs started out as an event like this. It was more people coming up to tell stories, and there was a website to go with it. And so why would Portland not have one of those things? So put it up, and it was a sort of leap of faith that people would want to contribute stories, and thankfully they have. TriMet Diaries is not really wonkish. It's not really political. There are numerous outlets for that. You can speak to Michael Anderson of Portland Afoot, or you could go to the pinnacle of human enlightenment and contribute to the Oregon Live comment section. So TriMet Diaries, not really political. It's more about stinky people and really humanity on wheels is really what it is. And thankfully we have some wonderful contributors that are writing gorgeous stories. Dr. Jeff writes gorgeous stories. Bill Regan, wonderful stories, and other contributors as well. So please, if you have a story to tell, by all means, trimetdiaries.com. Please send us your stories. We'd be happy to publish them. Whatever it may be, you know, bus, transit related, that sort of thing. And maybe even some swear words. So I will not have nearly as much material as Dr. Jeff. And I haven't actually written in quite a while because I don't live in Portland, but I will soon be coming back, which we're very happy about. But when I first moved to Portland, I lived in Northwest, and I worked in SOWA. I love that we have a neighborhood in Portland called SOWA. Streetcar was perfect. Streetcar was perfect for me, arguably the freshest smelling bit of public transportation in Portland. Though we are still able to play Guess the Stinker on Streetcar. You don't really win a prize when you play Guess the Stinker, except when they leave and you get to start your day with a feeling of accomplishment that you were able to guess correctly. So Streetcar every day. It is about as fast as a grazing bovine, as we know. And I was on the streetcar, and it was near PSU right before it turns onto Harrison. And I noticed this guy outside as we were passing by. And I wouldn't have noticed him, except he didn't have a shirt on. And he was just the kind of guy you want to see without a shirt. And how often does that happen? Not very often. And so I was like, what? It was summer. Okay, it was summer. But summer in Portland's still freaking cold. So what's he doing without a shirt? Except being really good looking. And, you know, he had the stomach, and, you know, he had the collarbone, and he probably had the V, you know. I didn't look that close, but, I mean, you can imagine. But it's chilly, you know, and you should have a shirt on or whatever. And I was watching this guy, and I know it's got to be 40 degrees, 40, 50 degrees, summertime. He passed out of my field of vision, and I watched. I'm going to watch that sort of thing. And so, you know, and at one point or another, I kind of turn my head back because I have some goddamn dignity and I'm not going to strain my neck or whatever. And it wasn't until then that I noticed there were two other women sitting in front of me, just as I was, doing the exact same thing that I was. They both, all three of us, in unison, turned our heads back after looking at the pretty boy. And I just, I was sitting farthest back, so they didn't notice me. But I was like, yeah, heterosexual sisters, let's go get a beer! And so, yeah, women, ogle too. Mogul. Thank you. That's one of those words I've always mispronounced all my entire life. And then my only other quick little streetcar story is 2008 Snowpocalypse. You remember that? I was waiting for the streetcar in my old neighborhood, and it was snowing. And it was beyond when we were still thinking snow was a novelty. We were done with snow. It was no longer fun. But it started to kind of flurry and everything, and there was a dude there, and not the same dude, but another good-looking dude. And it was a dude dressed up in drag. He was a drag queen. And he saw the snow and he said, oh, it's snowing. It makes me feel like a little girl again. So those are my two stories. Thank you. I just want to thank Doug for being the force of nature that he is and really pulling this together. We had, you know, a kernel of an idea, but really he's the dude who makes it happen. So I think he should be the Oregon delegate at the Smithsonian and liven that fucking place up. So thank you, Doug. Thank you, Jack London Bar, for having us. And please send us your stories to TriMet Diaries, and you could be the next ones up here. So thank you.
After Heather, William Regan told a story about dangerous assumptions.
Okay, does it really rhyme with mogul? Ogle? I thought it was ogle.
Yeah, me too!
Yeah, can we get a little show of hands? How about a show of hands for who says ogle?
Ogle!
Oh, clearly it's ogle. I only know that from that movie Stranger Than Fiction, where Will Ferrell actually struggles. I ogled you. And which to me was like, I felt for him. I was like, yes, I absolutely, you want to use the right word, but sometimes it's hard. You know, I want to thank Doug, not only for setting all this up, but for raising the fucking bar on the cursing, because I have a tendency to use that. And, you know, sometimes I worry. My boss is here, and it's like there are times at work when the only appropriate phrase is, I don't know, what the fuck? And so I'm glad to have a chance to do that here, and I appreciate everyone coming up. And one last tangent before I start my story. I was at the Lloyd Center watching the skating with my daughter one day, and there was a woman who was very, very charismatic selling the Crocs. And she's beautiful, and she's very clever, and these two guys walk by, and she says, hey, you know, you should come over here and buy some Crocs. And the guy says, no. And her response was the most succinct thing I've ever heard. She said, don't say no, say yes. It was like, oh my God, that is brilliant. You couldn't boil that down. And the reason I mention that is when it comes to open mic, don't say no, say yes. So come on up here after I'm done, all right? Please do. It's not that hard. Once you're up here, I can't see any of you anyway. So my story is called, it's about mistaken identity. And there's two things that you need to know about me to kind of put it all into a context. The first thing is, I like everybody. If you hate someone for the color of their skin or their sexual orientation or for a television show they like, I don't like you. But otherwise, you and I are going to get along fine. I like everybody, which is great for TriMet because when you're when you like everybody and you get to talk to everybody, it's nice. Like even just today, riding home on the bus with my daughter, a guy was telling us a story about how he had done plaster work all over Portland. And every hospital in Portland, he's put the plaster up. And it was fascinating to hear, well, fascinating might be overstating it, but it was neat, because it was that thing of like, wow, I totally did not expect this story on the way home. And it was a priceless moment when he said, hey, well, you guys have a good night. And he got off the bus, and my daughter, who's 9, said, what was that? And it was like, honey child, that's TriMet. Welcome to it. So that's the thing. First thing you need to know, I like everybody. Second thing you need to know, I am a judgmental bastard. And a hypocrite. Which means I am exactly like all of you, except I'm telling it for real. And you all are very quiet about your judgmental hypocrite. And I don't like being judgmental. I genuinely don't, because I really like people. The thing is sometimes I'll be sitting on the bus and I'll find myself fixating on like some dude's clown shoes, which he really aren't clown shoes in his mind, but they sure as hell are in mine. Or it might be someone like my bus driver today whose hair was the ideal haircut for a 1985 Bon Jovi video with just teased right the fuck up. It was like, it was really like, seriously, nobody has like had an intervention with you and said, you know, that's not really how hair is anymore. But it was nice. I mean, she was a very pleasant woman, so I just, again, judgmental bastard. Crucial for you to know that. Which explains why I was particularly annoyed by this guy with the Van Dyke on my bus. Y'all know what a Van Dyke is? It's the handlebar mustache that kind of comes out like this, plus the thin little soul patch. So it's Adrian Brody is using it in that new ad for whatever razor. And it's that thing of, like, I would especially, let me rephrase that. Adrian Brody is looking douchey when he does that on that fucking commercial. It's really like, you're trying to sell a thing, and all I can think is, God, what a fucking douche. I like this dude in some of the movies I saw him in. So I have sort of a weird natural anti-predilection towards the Van Dyke, which to me is sort of like, if you think of like mutton chops or a goatee, if you think of facial hair as a competitive sport, the Van Dyke is sort of like the, I'm going to win this goddamn thing. And so this guy would fucking, he had this Van Dyke. And I didn't know anything else about him. It's just what can I say? He gets on the bus after I do, and I usually would sit in the middle, and he would get on and sit further to the front. So I wouldn't see him every day. Like, there might be a month when I wouldn't see him at all, and then a week when I'd see him a few times. So clearly his schedule is much more flexible than mine. But so he would get on, and I didn't have anything to judge him on except, obviously, the Van Dyke and how he interacted with other riders. And we have kind of like a regular's bus, which is a lot like a regular's bar, minus the social lubrication. And so there's a lot of quiet on the bus. And it's normal for people not to interact. But usually there's that little courteous, hey, how you doing? Yeah, good to see you, you know. And then everybody goes back to their iPods or their books or something. And this guy didn't ever do that. He never seemed to talk to anyone. He didn't even seem to be talking to the people at his bus stop. And so what I came to realize was he was just a hipster. And I don't dislike hipsters because, frankly, they're innocuous, you know? People who get upset about hipsters, it's like, well, why? What are the white frame sunglasses? That doesn't hurt you at all, you know? So somebody chooses to wear that. That's no big deal. And that's how I feel about hipsters. And, in fact, somebody on Twitter who I can't credit because I don't remember who it was said the line that I love. I hate the people who hate hipsters more than I hate hipsters. And that's how I feel. I really is like, y'all good, except for this one hipster who I fucking hated. And I hated him for what seemed to me to be obvious reasons. Because all you had to do was look at this guy and be like, dude, you're such a fucking asshole. And so, all aloof. And you know, when I see someone who's aloof on the bus, it's... they kind of have that attitude of like, listen, this is just a temporary thing for me. You all have chosen this as a lifestyle. Me, my car's broken down or whatever the fucking thing is. And it's really like, if you're on the bus, you're on the bus. That's it, you know? There is no strata on the bus. Once you're on there, that's it. So I'm looking at this guy like, you fucking aloof motherfucker. And I never have to actually really look at him very closely because he's always sitting far away from me. Until this one day when he sits down right next to me. And it was kind of like, we're going to come to blows. I mean, there's nothing else it could be. And so even when I'm being a judgmental bastard, I'm always courteous. So he sat down and I said, good morning. And he kind of gave me that, like the very bare minimum you can acknowledge someone with, but absolutely no excess, no actual uttered word, no eye contact. And it was like, all right, dude, that's how it's going to be. So he starts fishing into his bag and he's going to pull out a book. I can see that he's going to grab a book. And I'm thinking, Dave Eggers, that's my bet. You know, that's what's coming out of here. And if maybe not, maybe worse, like David Foster Wallace. And it's like, and not only that, but he's reading it without the footnotes, and we'll go back and read the footnotes later. So I'm fucking ready. And it was just like, I know you're fucking dude. Well, what he pulls out is a children's chapter book with large print. And I'm thinking, well, shit, dude. I don't know how to fit this into the Portlandia of your life that I've created about you. And this is a genuine struggle for me. So I almost wanted to say, hold on a minute. Let me reconcoct my fiction and put this into it. So he opens up the chapter book and he starts to read. And I hear his voice for the first time. And he is struggling with the words. And reading very slowly, he's moving his finger along very slowly, and I realize the guy has a developmental disability, and I'm an asshole. I mean, there's no fucking way around it. I mean, I'm sitting there facing that reality of like, dude, the fucking shit you build up in your head about other people is a fucking farce, you know? And you're the only person who believed it. You're the only person who even knew about it. It's just this. And to kind of have to come face to face with that reality was gruesome, I'll be honest. I mean, you can read about this on TriMetDiaries.com. And the only way to describe it was I was suffocating with shame. I'm just sitting there in the chair and I'm listening to him kind of piece out these words. And it's just like, you fucking asshole, you're such a fucking... I was, honest to God, Louis C.K. couldn't have been harder on himself than I was at that moment. It was just, it was so harsh. And when I started to piece together this new scenario where it's like, oh man, he's like developmentally disabled and the Van Dyke is only so that he can feel a little bit normal in a world that doesn't, where he doesn't feel normal at all. And then I thought, dude, you're really bad at making up scenarios. So stop this shit right now. So I just sat there, and I'm listening to his voice, and I'm just feeling like an asshole and thinking like, you know I'm trying to find that like Lifetime movie moment where it's like, oh, I'm gonna walk away from this a bigger man. And it's like, well, no, you're going to walk away from this an asshole, dude. And so when it came to my stop, I said, you know, hey, have a nice day. And he gave me the same, you know. And I realized that is what he has because he doesn't want to converse with me. He doesn't want to deal with me. And I totally understand because I'm a judgmental asshole and he's got enough fucking problems in his life that he doesn't even need to deal with me. And as I said that, I said, have a nice day and moved on. And honest to God, with all my heart, it was like, I hope I am on your radar for the very first time. Like, I hope that you're thinking of me as, huh, I don't know who he is, but he was a very nice guy who said, have a nice day on the max, and not the sometimes judgmental asshole that I am. So, thanks very much for coming out. Thank you, Terry, for hosting us. Stick around after the intermission and come up and tell your stories.
Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot. kicked off the open mic.
I'm going to do a very brief sales pitch, and this is on behalf of TriMet Diaries. If you enjoy tonight's show, do you guys enjoy tonight's show? If you enjoy tonight's show and would like to support TriMet Diaries, you should go to trimetdiaries.com, and you should click on the ad that says Portland Afoot, and you should subscribe to that for less than the price of a pitcher of beer for $14 a year. It will last all year. Dave and Heather and I will split your money. We will have a party of $1 bills. We will throw them up in the air. We will buy a pitcher of beer. It'll be great. This comes out, this is a little tiny 10-minute news magazine. It comes out once a month. It has a story each month from the bus. And I'm going to attempt to recite one from memory, so wish me luck. This is my favorite that we've ever done. It takes about 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Here it is. It's from a man named Sky, who's he's a natural performer, so I'm going to try and channel Sky. Sky is a very tall, blonde actor man. And his story begins on the 75. He's talking to his roommate, and I'm going to speak in Sky's voice, as I do in the news magazine. Sky says that I've been riding the 75 for years, and I've never seen him speak. I've never seen this man speak. He's been riding the 75. I see him all the time running up 39th Avenue, and he never says a word. But here's what he does instead. He makes the bad juju fingers. Do you know the bad juju fingers? He'll like stare at you, and he'll, you know the Jedis in Return of the Jedi when they're shooting lightning out of the fingers? It's like that, except without the lightning. And he'll go, and he'll stare at you, and he'll stare you down and be like, and I was like, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're an asshole. Don't make the bad juju fingers at me. I was talking to my roommate, and he said that he knew the same guy. He said, I've seen that guy too. I know exactly who you're talking about. I've seen him like 4 times. And we decided then and there that we had to battle him. We had to battle the Jedi man on the bus, and we saw him the next day. We were riding the 75 together. There he was. He got on the bus. We knew that this was our time. We were very excited. This was our time. We stood up, and we looked at him. And he began to look at us, and we attracted his attention, and he began to do the juju fingers. He began to do this. And he glared at us, and we were like, he's going at it, man. And we met his challenge. We stood up, and we were like, come on, man, let's do it. And we were all going like, it was a battle on the bus, on the 75. We were all doing this. Everybody was watching, and we were going at it, and it was fantastic. And he was like, all right, I step up my game. And he was going more intense. Like, and we kept at him going it. And it was a battle. It was back and forth and back and forth. And then he stopped. It was like he wilted. His arm dropped to his side, and he sat down, and he was silent, and he got off at the next stop, and I've never seen him since. I swear to God, I've never seen him since.
And lastly, for this week's collection from Humanity on Wheels, An Evening of Mass Transit Tales, the opening monologue that Doug Kent Crispin from orhistory.com delivered about some of the history of transit in Portland, Oregon.
I'm going to tell you the dark side of riding the bus, which I do every fucking day, two ways. By the way, I sit in the back of the bus, the very back row, so I can watch all you fuckers, because I don't trust any of you. And here we are today. I'm going to tell you why riding TriMet is a fucking horrible decision, and why you shouldn't take the bus or the MAX. You should just fucking walk the earth like Cain. So, our story begins. A graffitied wall in downtown Portland in the 1980s by the Galleria. Does anybody remember the wall in question? That wall, you, all you sons of bitches, y'all came from Boston like my fucking wife. The wall read Mad Max, Portland's death trolley. And I shit you not, this is real life graffiti. And it was a fitting moniker. For before Max even began conveying passengers to and from Gresham, Max had claimed its first soul. Before somebody took a transfer, Max had killed somebody. July 28th, 1986, a little after 11 p.m., Albert Ellie Jr. of Vancouver, Washington, was in a car that broke down on the Banfield. You're giggling, and I'm not making this shit up. I'm a fucking historian. Elliot was a problem-solving, resourceful Kuvite, and he began looking for some wire or a nail to fashion a cotter pin to do a quick fix on his disabled vehicle, something with the wheel. So what did he do? He climbed over the 3.5-foot retaining wall that ran along the Banfield Freeway. Little did Mr. Ellie know that Max 123, that was the number, Max 123 was in a high-speed training exercise because they were to begin conveying passengers in September. Traveling at nearly 50 miles an hour, Dale DePell, TriMet's driver of the year in 1983. Did they take that back? I don't think so. He saw Ellie on the tracks at a distance of about 80 feet, but he was going 50. He applied the brakes as soon as he could, but it was too late. Mad Max claimed its first victim. Ellie was thrown more than 50 feet, and he died on the tracks. But of course, this incident is not the first streetcar disaster that happened in our fair city. On April 28, 1897, a streetcar at East Morrison Street broke an axle, skipped the track, and careened down a bridge, crashed through a guardrail, and plunged perilously into the slough below. The Oregonian reported that the crash of breaking timbers was mingled with the agonizing shrieks and pitiful cries of the wounded and struggling passengers in the half-submerged car. The streetcar started filling with water, and trapped passengers tried to break the windows out to escape the death trap. Some reported that they were almost free from the wreckage when others inside pulled them back in a feeble attempt to save their own lives. Three were trapped inside the streetcar, with rescuers unable to extract them, and they drowned. One of the victims was Miss Bailey, a 23-year-old housekeeper who, in the tumbling, got trapped under one of the broken bridge stay braces. Rescuers tried to grab onto her feet and pull her out, but for some reason, Miss Bailey drew her legs back up closer to her body, and she died before they were able to cut a hole into the car and save her. Nearly 20 others were injured in this dramatic, historic illustration of death from mass transit. And I want to thank my buddy Joe out here for giving me the heads up on this. Joe's one of my historian friends. We get together and we talk about whores. They're always dead whores. Like, whores that died like 120 years ago. It's fucking weird. But it's fun. If you want to join us, shoot me an email. We can drink beer. So I know you're thinking, yeah, you think I'm a dumbass for riding TriMet, huh, Doug?
because some streetcar fucking plopped in the slough in 1897? You're the fucking dumbass, Doug. No, actually, you are the fucking dumbass. Let's look at some more recent shit, all right? Let's jump to 1996. I quote, people started running towards the front of the bus, screaming, open the doors, and then pow, there was a shot. I was looking right at the guy. He was bleeding. He was dying. Everyone was shouting and screaming. It was chaos. Gunfire on a crowded bus. No way of escape as bullets fly randomly down the long, crowded tube on wheels. This was the all-so-real scene that greeted commuters on a Sunday, April afternoon in 1996 on the number 6. That's up on my ass. A man simply bumped into another man, and yelling and chippy words started to fly. Soon a gun appeared, and seemingly unaware of the other riders on the bus on that Friday afternoon rush hour, Jason Clough shot Delroy James in the neck. As James fell to the floor with blood gushing from his gaping wound, passengers screamed and tried to flee the packed bus. You've been there. Imagine trying to get out of a fucking bus as some guy just shot another guy in the fucking neck. Some crouched behind seats, others jumped from open windows. As bedlam and mayhem triumphed, Clough delivered a fatal point-blank shot to James's face. As Clough exited the bus and ran, a buddy of James also got off the bus, pulled out his handgun, and started shooting at the fleeing murderer. And, of course, all the other fleeing passengers. He ended up hitting Clough in the ass. And Clough was taken to Legacy Emanuel Hospital. But this is only the first shooting that resulted in a death on the TriMet bus. That's right, only the first. The second was a year later, in 1997, in August, on the number 4, another bus I ride towards my house, causing the bus to crash into a North Portland utility pole. And this is my favorite, because I live up in North Portland, and I get down like this too. See, the bus crashed into the utility pole, and for the sake of discussion, there were 20 people on the bus. While the TriMet inspectors and everybody else started coming by to see what was going on, all of a sudden there's 40 passengers that were on the bus. Bystanders had kind of seen it go down, and they just kind of stood around waiting for the TriMet checks. I'd be there too. Transfer holding passengers have not been the only victims of the bus's wrath here in Portland. One peculiar and really gruesome mishap involved what TriMet has termed a bus versus operator accident. I shit you not. A bus versus operator accident. At noon on November 2nd, 2004, TriMet driver Diane Booth pulled her number 62 into the Sunset Transit Center. Ms. Booth got out of her bus, but apparently she'd forgotten to put the bus into park or to set the brake. Gravity took effect as she was standing in front of the bus. Ms. Booth held her hands up in front of her face and her body in a feeble attempt to stop the massive vehicle from coming. But of course, gravity always wins. And Ms. Booth was squished under the bus. She died from massive head trauma and compression. The bus continued rolling on, knocked down the metal sign, and popped a tire. So to summarize why I think you're a dumbass to ride the bus with an axe, I'm going to read to you my historian piece from the conclusion of our podcast. Thank you. I ride the bus every day. Every fucking day. To and from my real job in downtown Portland. And I've pretty much done this since high school in 1984. Every fucking day. And to be honest, I haven't really seen too much activity to make me feel unsafe. I have seen some serious douchebaggery.
and have been appalled at the behaviors of many of my fellow passengers. With the exception of some asswipe attempting to light some guy's hair on fire with his fucking Bic lighter, I haven't seen too much to make me fear for the safety of my peer passengers. No guns, no knives, and not too much drunken male aggression. For the most part, normal, everyday folks headed to work, listening to iPods, reading their books, sprinkled with a handful of self-centered dickwads that always populate the public conveyance machine. Yes, there have been shootings. Yes, Max has squished a fair number of oblivious, handicapped, or intoxicated pedestrians. But as far as most writers go, I feel pretty confident in saying your physical wellness is less threatened by getting mushed by a bus, and you're actually more in danger of catching a cold from some fuckhead in a puffy North Face down jacket deciding to open the goddamn window on a cold winter morning. Thanks a lot, prick. Why don't you go out to Gresham, go to Ron Tonkin, and buy a fucking car. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this first installment of Humanity on Wheels, An Evening of Mass Transit Tales, presented by ORHistory.com and TriMetDiaries.com. Remember to check the podcast again next week for selections from the open mic segment of the evening. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback about the program. Send us your suggestions for anything you'd like us to talk about, anything you'd like us to drink, or anyone you'd like us to have on the show. Our email address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave us a voicemail at 503-847-9774. We can put it on the program for you. Or you can text message us at that same number, 503-847-9774. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He's on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. And thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder there at hurtbirdmusic.com. Keep listening, and we'll see you next time on the Sprocket Podcast.